Hey folks, welcome to another interview-only episode of the MLF Bass Fishing Podcast. This time, I've got Brian Schmidt on to talk about his win in the Toyota Series event on Lake Toho, and also to talk about generally being a baller and being the new record holder for most Toyota Series wins all time. I can tell you for this, the audio is really good. And it's got Brian Schmidt's voice, so it's like triple good. So folks, I think this is a good one, and without further ado, here's Brian Schmidt. All right, and now we are joined by Brian Schmidt, who is the new record holder for most Toyota Series wins of all time. Brian, man, I guess congratulations, and thanks for coming on.
Jody, man, I appreciate it, and thank you for having me on. You know, that's been on the back of my mind, man. You know, you never know if it's ever going to happen again. And super delighted to have got it done, man, for sure.
So, to like kind of wrap this up, you were in a three-way tie at five wins with, let's see. It was you and Kobe Krieger and Randy Haynes, which is kind of interesting because it's coming from all parts of the country. You know, you had a real, each guy had their strength and they had certain zones. But man, you came down to Florida, you came down to Toho, and you were leading by 12 pounds after day two. And boy, you broke the tie in style, man.
Jody, I tell you, after the day two weigh-in, I was shocked that I was in, you know, going into the final day with a 12-pound lead. I felt way more pressure having that lead because I said, man, if you mess this up, it's going to be bad. Like, you know, you feel more pressure with that 12-pound lead and, you know, then being a couple pounds up or a couple pounds behind. So, you know, it was weird how that all happened. Like, the guys that really caught them day one struggled day two. And nobody else really busted them big day two to where I had that lead. I did not see that coming.
Yeah, it was an interesting tournament because, like, the conditions for it and the fact that there was such a strong offshore bite, I really thought that if you had caught them that well on day two, that there would be somebody else who also caught them that well on day two. And that it would be a horse race going into the end. And it really wasn't. I mean, some of those guys who were flipping, like, you know, Mike Kiso, you know, Steven Hadala, like, those guys, they had pretty good overall tournaments, but they were not on that top end that you and some of those other offshore guys were on.
Not at all. And what's crazy about this whole thing, Jody, is I had no idea that those fish were there. I found that in practice and never had a bite on it. Now, it was blowing 30. Like, we had 2 days of severe wind in practice, severe cold and severe wind, where it was like you almost question yourself even going out because you couldn't be productive, but you felt, you know, like you weren't doing yourself justice by not going. So I did find it in a nasty day, but I never caught a fish there. And unfortunately, everything that I did feel like I could get a bite on in Toho got dirty. It's weird that even in the middle of the lake, it areas of the lake got really muddy. And it showed me that there is current. Like, you could watch it move every day, and it was moving towards the lock at the lower end, and two places that I thought I could get a bite, nothing of that magnitude, like there was definitely some fish on it, they got completely dirty, and I was, you know, in kind of rough shape going into the event.
Yeah, that was it was interesting how like it, that event, it kind of evolved as it went on for a lot of guys.
Yes,
and
sir.
For you, even, you know, day one and day two, that spot was ultra money. And then on day three, you could tell, like, if it was a 4-day tournament, it could have got dicey, right?
100%. Like, it was going away, and I said that to a lot of people. Like, if it was a 4-day event, I don't know what would have happened. Like, I would have, obviously, I would have had to start on that again, but I would have to have found something else or gone shallow or something to even have a chance, because I caught two fish there the final day, and I had two other bumps. So the first 2 days there was no bumping. It was, you would only, you know, if you felt something, it was coming in the boat. The few that were left, I think they were smart. You know, and it was going away, no doubt.
Well, that final, or that's that area that we're talking about, just if folks haven't read or they're not really super dialed on it, can you explain what it is you were fishing? You know, what, because it was basically like a line of grass, but can you kind of lay it out just so people can try and get a real understanding of it? Because it was a pretty unique area, if you ask me.
So, you know, in practice, you're you know, for a guy like me, a grass guy, you're trying to find something different. And when you go to these places that are overwhelming with grass, there is always something different. You know, there is times where just this big grass bed, it looks the same, the fish are just there. But the easiest way for a guy to break down somewhere that he hasn't been is find something different. If it's isolation or sparse grass or edges or points. So, you know, after a day or so of marking areas and fishing them that look different, I was not coming up with much. And I'm riding, you know, about 40 mile per hour around the lake, just, you know, kind of speed scanning, which I like to do. And I'm in this area that there's no grass, no grass, no grass for a long time. And then, boom, there's one clump. So I come off plane, and I'm like, wow. And I'm, you know, put a dot on it. And then I side scan that area, and there was, like, you know, a little line, a really sparse hydrilla in what I would consider, like, a desert. Like, there was nothing around. And to me, it looked phenomenal, you know. So I'm like, wow, this is the most prettiest stuff I've seen. And I stop and I make a cast and I don't get bit. And I fish it a good bit and don't get bit. But it was on my mind, man, because it was the one place that I found that I'm like, if there's any fish around here, they have no choice but to be here. And it was kind of leading into, like, a bay, you know, like, it had the makings of, like, a really good spot, because, like, it was a line that started towards the middle of the lake and went towards the shore. And it was, like, the perfect, you know, migration route, and I believe that the bottom, you know, had a lot of shell, because it was a hard bottom, man. I mean, like, there was nothing growing, and you just have a little strip. So it looked right, Jody, and it's just crazy, man. I didn't get a bite, but I believe the cold weather put some fish there, and that's how that happened.
How tall was that grass? Because I, you know, there were parts of that lake where you could be out 300 yards off the bank and see grass right on the surface, and then what you were fishing, you know, I didn't get right on top of it, I don't think, but I never saw it, that's for sure.
So a lot of it, you know, had 2 or 3 foot of water over it, which is really good, you know, for moving baits. And And that was the majority of it. There was a couple pieces that almost came up to the surface. But I just think, once again, that it was just so isolated and so sparse that if a fish was around it, they could feel or see your bait, in my mind. You know, like, they couldn't really hide good.
Like, you didn't have to hit him in the head to get him to bite.
Correct.
Okay, that's cool, because, like, there's a lot of times where you see in Florida where it seems like, you know, they bite it right when you rip it out of something, or where it's almost like guys fish a speed worm super slow through the grass. And, like, you were, you know, I know there were times where you were actually fishing at specific fish, but there were also plenty of times where you would just kind of fire out a long cast and, you know, it didn't look, you just looked like you were working a bait. It wasn't, you know, wow, all that interesting or weird looking. You were just kind of fishing along.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of the bites would come away from the grass. In my mind, there would be two or three fish that are circling that clump or just huddled down near that clump. And eventually your bait would draw their interest and they would follow it and then eventually commit to it. And there was times, like, I'm almost getting ready to pull my bait out of the water and I would get a bite. Like, I know that fish followed it, you know,
for sure.
And I did, without a doubt, because of, I think it was so sparse that I was able to see a fish or two. And I know for a fact that, like, I caught some fish, you know, via live scope. Like, I would see them, throw to them, and watch them react, you know, and it was really cool.
It's amazing that you caught fish like that. I mean, because live scope's awesome, obviously, but you don't think about live scope as being a player in Florida, and lo and behold, it was.
100%.
For that, did you have your live scope on forward or did you have it on perspective? Because I feel like in that situation, there could be an argument made that perspective would actually work pretty well in, you know, getting the lay of the land there.
For sure. I had it on forward. You know, I was running 100 feet out, and that's just kind of where I was at with it that week. And, you know, I wanted to be able to see my targets, you know, well in front of me as well. You know, sometimes I would pull down and I would just scan and I would throw, like, there would be a little piece of grass, you know, just off by itself, and I would throw at it, you know. And that was the key, man. It was being away from it and, you know, making real long casts for the first 2 days.
Cool. As far as your baits, can you kind of give me the lowdown on that front too? Because I watched you throw that Oruku shad a ton. And did you catch them on other stuff, or really was that your primary bait? And then also, did you retire that bait, or is it still in the box ready to go?
So that, you know, like you said, that was the, you know, the breadwinner, I would say, for that week. I did catch some fish on, you know, Nico rigging, Missile Baits quiver, and a 48. You know, especially day two and a little bit of day one. Just, it kind of got slick, it got calm, and I did catch some fish doing that, and I did catch a couple on my swim jig, my new Hayabusa swim jig. But I would say the bulk of my weigh-in fish came on that, you know, that Oruku shad. And it was amazing to me I never lost a fish on that bait this week. Especially the first 2 days, Jody, every fish I caught, now I wasn't catching 50 fish, but every fish I caught, I honestly had to take my time and get the pliers. I mean, they engulfed it. I knew I had the bait, I had the color, you know, everything, man. It was amazing how they would eat it. And to not lose one on a you know, that style bait is a statement.
Yeah, no doubt. Because, like, you know, you almost always have to build in some lost fish on a treble hooked
yes,
bait.
Sir.
And that you didn't is amazing.
It was crazy. But they, I mean, what's weird is, I'll tell you how this all kind of transpires. So in practice, you know, it's sunny and warm for a couple of days. And, you know, I was more into the vibrating jig and the swim jig. And then we had 2 days of really, really cold weather. And I caught one fish on that Aruco shad in practice. Off this one spot. It was a 9-pound fish, but Jody, there was nobody else around. It was just a lucky bite. Like, I fished that area thoroughly after that and caught one 12-incher. So I was lucky enough to know, you know, because that can lead you astray. You know, you catch a 9-pounder, oh my goodness, I got to give that some time. Well, I knew it wasn't a deal. But the way that fish ate it clued me in. So, you know, I actually locked through day one, I'd say it's about 9 in the morning, and I went down to Cypress. And a buddy of mine who was in the event, Billy Sheldon, he was on some fish down there, and he waved me over. And, man, you know, it was nice of him to wave me over, you know. And as I'm trolling towards them, I saw a cluster of fish on my live scope that weren't on grass. They were near it, but they weren't on it. And I threw that Aruco shad over there, let it hit the bottom. I popped it one time, and every one of those fish went after it. And I caught 5 in a row. And all 5 of those had it choked. So long story short is, that gave me the confidence. I'm like, man, I got the bait. You know, I got the bait if I could find them. And I told Billy, I said, hey, thank you, bro. Like, I'm out of here. You know, I could see them, keep throwing there. I got 5. And at the time, man, I was tickled pink. I'm like, you know, if I do this 2 days in a row, I'm going to have a decent tournament, you know?
Yeah.
I played 14, 15 pounds of fish. And I tried to find more of that in Cypress, and I couldn't. And I locked back through around lunchtime. And I said, man, if I could get one big bite, it's a good bag. So I tried 3 or 4 spots. Jody never had a bite. And then I pulled onto that winning spot, not a boat around, and I caught a 5. Like, my second cast caught a 5. And then my co-angler caught a 8, and I'm like, okay, they are not here by themselves. And I caught another 5 and a 7, and he caught a 5. So we caught 5 fish there in the afternoon of the first day, and they were all over 5 pounds. And he switched over to a rattle trap, and I was super excited now, you know, because, like, I think I had 25 or so pounds, and, you know, can't wait to get back there. Because usually if you find them, they really bite good in the mornings, you know. So I had whatever I weighed in day 2, I had it by 9:30. And every one of them, same thing, they absolutely choked it. But to know you have the bait, you know what I mean, that really gives you a lot of confidence.
Yeah, no doubt. Like, that's, it's cool that you got it that dialed in. Have you've won a lot of tournaments. And I guess, you know, day 3 of this event, it kind of started to get away from you a little bit. But there was a period for, let's call it a day and a half, where you were absolutely, like, bar none, the hottest thing going on Toho. Have you ever had a little stretch like that, or have you ever had a tournament like that where it was clicking so good before?
I would say yes. I had one other event that reminded me of this, and it was a Potomac River Toyota Series where you know you have something special and you have it to yourself as far as the area, and you know you have the technique. And that's kind of the way this Toho was. Like, I felt like, you know, as I showed up there day two morning and they were there and they were biting and I had it to myself, I'm like, this is special. I told my co-hanger, I said, this is a special deal. And I've seen it one other time. I had a special spot on the Potomac that I was the same scenario, man. I was running out of a creek and there was some grass where grass had never been. And man, they were there. And it was like, you know, and I had the tie dialed to the second, like, and it was special like that. And, you know, I would just throttle them. And it was the same kind of scenario, man. Like, I was super, super dialed on that one, super dialed on this one. But this one happened during the event. That one I knew was special going into it, you know.
Which Potomac event was that? Because you've, I mean, to say, oh, well, it was one of the ones on the Potomac, I mean, that's actually kind of a bunch.
It was, I believe it was a June tournament, a June Toyota Series. It might have been 2013-ish.
All right, you had 52.8 that year.
Yep. And that was just one of those deals. I've never seen the grass there again. There were so many things. I don't want to waste your time there, but there were so many things going on.
You cannot waste my time listening to you talk about the Potomac. I'm all ears all day.
So I think that particular deal was some leftover hydrilla. This is how crazy we are. We all think about this. So the grass leaves the Potomac in the winter. The only grass that stays around is milfoil. But this was hydrilla left over from the year before. As crazy as it sounds, I think it snagged a shell bottom as it was getting pulled out of the creek on an outgoing tide. And I found it in March, and there was no fish on it. And then you fast forward to a June tournament, late May, I checked it, and some fish had went to it on post-spawn. And it was getting better by the day. But it was so sparse and it was so deep that it shouldn't have been there. It just shouldn't have been there. And hydrilla doesn't grow on a Potomac usually till like July, August, you know, so that was such a weird deal. And then when you would show up there in the mornings, there was shad, balls of shad just rippling all over top of this area. It was almost like there was a shad spawn on top of this grass. It had a lot going for it, Jody.
Golly.
And you could not touch a fish there until the tide was going out. So I would pull up there on the outgoing tide, and man, it was special. It really was special. It was some of the most numbers I ever caught in a tournament, and it was meant to be. But you know, this tournament here was the same kind of scenario. It's like I feel a shell bottom with some sparse hydrilla, and you know, it was meant to be, man.
No doubt. I thought you might say when you won at the Mississippi for that FLW was, yeah, Tour event. Because, man, you were stroking them for that one.
That, no doubt, that was some of the most numbers I've ever caught as well. And I feel the conditions, like the Mississippi River was flooding. And every fish in an area, like massive area, was seeking out of current, and this was the only place they could do it. And they were literally coming there by the second. And that was a special one as well. I'll never forget that, man.
Good deal. Also, how bad the weather was in that one. Golly. Well, I guess, big picture, you've got the Toyota Series wins record now. You're not done yet. We're going to keep having tournaments, you know, on the Potomac, on the James. I guarantee you, you're going to get some more opportunities close to home. You'll probably get some more opportunities other places, too, if you keep fishing around like you do. What's it mean to have the wins record? I mean, that's something that's really cool. And it's, you know, the guys you beat are super accomplished, but there's a lot of guys who haven't even come close to that.
It means a lot to me, Jody. You know, when I knew I was tied, I was like, wow, you know, that's pretty cool, man. I mean, these Toyota Series, you're fishing against the best of the best on that body of water. There's no qualifying for it. It's the biggest deal that hits a local body of water. So anybody's going to fish it. And, you know, it brings the talent. And, you know, like a lot of the guys that they're dialed in, they live there, man, they got a beat on what's going on, and it's a hard deal to do. It's a hard deal to do. I'm honored to have it. And yes, like, I'm going to be fishing the Potomac Toyota Series this year, you know, on the Potomac here. I think it's in September. Last year I finished third, man. Like, felt like I could have won that one if some things would have went different, man. But I'm gonna keep on chasing them for sure. You know, I enjoy the format, and I'll tell you something that, you know, I wouldn't mind sharing, that it kind of changed me as a fisherman. So years ago, I believe the Toyota Series at the time were, it was an EverStart. It was a 4-day event.
Yep.
And I had one on the Potomac in October. And, you know, at that time, I think this is 2009, 8, somewhere in there, 10. I fished a lot of tournaments on the Potomac. Like, me and my team partner, man, we had an event almost every weekend, and we stayed on them. And this event, like, we had just done really good in some team championship, like, 2 weeks before the tournament. And I had the best practice that I've ever had till this day for a tournament, and the best plan, Jody. Like, you know, there was a major change in weather. Like, it was going to go from summer to fall during the tournament, and there's a big front coming, all this, that. And the fish that I was banking on, they were frog fish. See, back then, you could do some damage with a frog. I had a mat that you could pull up to late in the evening and just watch it. And you would see giant bass blowing up through this mat, you know, eating bluegill or shad or whatever. And so I was going to, you know, lean on that really good. And then I was going to fall back on a hard structure bite I had. And I think I'm leading it after 3 days, man. And here comes this big front. And it shut down the frog bite. You know, like, it's blowing, it's cold. And I fall back on my hard cover deal. And I had like 13 pounds in the really quick in the morning. And I'm like, man, I need one good bite. And I hook a 4-pounder and I lose it at the boat, you know. And I knew that was the fish right there. Well, I still had like 3 hours, but you know, when you're dealing with a tidal fishery, sometimes now the tide's not good. And but I made a commitment. I said, I'm just going to stay here. And, you know, if I get one more bite here, I believe I can do it. So with an hour left, man, I get a bite, and it's a five-pounder, man. I'm fighting them to the boat, and I lose them right at the boat again. And both of these fish were on jigs, like not flip, you know, not swimming jigs, but a flipping jig.
You're not supposed to lose those fish.
Not supposed to lose those. And long story short, man, I lose that tournament. I finished second, I think, by less than a pound. And I was so distraught because, like, everything went to plan. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I should have won this thing by a landslide. But because of that, it made me even more hungry. And I said, I have to find more fish. Like, I have to be even more prepared. And I think that, you know, inspired me to do what I've done and really, really try to, you know, not let a lost fish cost you in these Toyota series. And then I think the next year I won and it, you know, started to really develop. So that was a big deal for me, man. I'll never forget that at the time in my life. Like, that was a big deal on money. You know, it was crushing, but it made me a lot more hungry. And, you know, I just wanted to share that, man, because, like, I'll never forget that to this day, because it was, like, the best everything. Everything went right. You got the bites. The plan worked out. And it, for whatever reason, wasn't meant to be. But, man, I'm going to keep chasing them, Jody, for sure. And, you know, I'm blessed to have that title, but I know, you know, it's not safe. You know what I mean? I would like to keep it for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, it's not safe, but I tell you what, you will have a little bit of lead up to knowing when that when someone is coming after you. Because
yes, sir.
What Ray Hanselman did, where he won four in a year, that doesn't happen very often. So
no.
When somebody else gets close again, then you'll be able to, you know, kind of think it through a little bit, I suppose. One question I had, you said you were going to fish the Potomac. Do you think you're going to be able, I guess, you're qualified now for the championship, right? So we'll see you at Pickwick too.
Well, that's the whole deal. I need to find out how that works, Jody. Because Mark was telling me, you know, the tournament director, he's like, you know, if you win one, you're in the championship. But I don't know if that means I have to participate in the tournaments in that division.
Okay. I think that you might need to pay the entry fees for them, but I'm not sure. But I'm pretty sure you're, like, in. I think that I would call an expert and find out, but I don't think you need to fish the other events. I don't know if you need to pay for the other events, but I would recommend going to Pickwick because it's a lot of money on the line down there, and, you know, Pickwick's got grass in it. That could be a good derby for you.
I agree with you 100%.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Well, man, I really appreciate the lowdown, the skills. I like going back in time on the Potomac, and I always enjoy talking with you. Is there anything you want to plug, anywhere we should follow to find more Brian Schmidt in our lives? You know, this is your time, man.
100%. You know, I appreciate everything. And guys, you know, check me out on Brian Schmidt Fishing for everything. You know, Instagram, Facebook. I'm getting a little bit of YouTube stuff going. And, you know, just keep track and, you know, wish me luck. And I'll see everybody on the water, man.
And can people book guide trips with you, or are you kind of in the throes of the bass season right now?
So 100%, I do bass guide trips on the Potomac and Upper Bay, as well as charter fishing for striped bass. So, you know, just message me, you know, on Facebook or Instagram if you're interested. I'll get you all the information you need, and we'd love to have you for sure.
All right. Well, Brian, thanks so much for coming on. Congratulations on the record, and good luck the rest of this year, man. I want it to be a big year for you.
I appreciate it, Jody.